All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hello, welcome back to the Sober Mom Life podcast. If you're new here, then welcome. You might be wondering what we do. And you know, we just start telling the truth about alcohol and shining a light on sobriety and sharing all of the abundance that it is. Because you guys, spoiler alert, sobriety does not have to be about deprivation. Mine has never been. And so we talk about that. Today, I'm excited. We have Rachel Paula Abrahamson, and she is a digital reporter at the Today Show. She wrote an article for today.com called Getting Sober for Moms, Sober Groups Combat Wine Mom Culture, which, you know, that is right up my alley. So I had to have her on. Rachel herself is sober, and her journey is very interesting because she lost 100 pounds. And the whole time she thought that she drank because, as she put it, she was fat and awkward. But then she lost 100 pounds and she kept drinking. So her story is so interesting. And you guys, I'm telling you, she is a ray of sunshine in sobriety. Like, if someone is living an abundant, sober life, it is Rachel. And she was just a joy to talk to. You will fall in love with her. Make sure you go and follow her. We'll have everything in the show notes. And before you get into the episode, don't forget, if you're looking for community and connection in sobriety, come and join us in the Sober Mom Life Cafe. We now have Zoom peer support meetings 7 days a week. And man, we went on a retreat. We've got monthly book club. We have so much going on over there. You are not alone in a drinking world, you guys. You are not alone. If I could tell you anything, it's that. Come and join us. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review it. That helps us a lot. And come and follow me on My Kind of Sweet and The Sober Mom Life on Instagram. And okay, let's just get into it. Enough of me. Let's get into the episode with Rachel. So, Rachel, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited. It's my first sober podcast.
Is it really? Okay, well, I'm flattered and honored to have you. I had to have you because I read your article on today.com. What is it? Sober moms are challenging wine mom culture one playdate at a time. I love that.
Yes.
And that is so right up my alley. So, and you talk a little bit about in the post, your story. Do you want to start there and tell me where it started for you?
Sure. I celebrated 1 year on January 1st. So I'm new to this.
I mean, one whole year, that's huge.
It's huge, right?
So yes.
It was something I think we all feel this, like everyone else was going to get sober, but not me. And I would watch people do it and think it's never going to be me. Like, I just cannot do this.
Yeah.
I started binge drinking when I was 15. I was very heavy. I was an obese child, an obese teen. And part of my story was thinking that once I found love and had kids, and also once I lost weight, I had weight loss surgery in 2019, and I've maintained an 107-pound weight loss.
Oh, wow.
But what happened was I always told myself that my drinking was because I was fat and I was self-conscious. And that as soon as I was like thin, I would suddenly be a person who drinks two glasses of wine and is fine. But that didn't happen. And in fact, my drinking spiraled even more and it got worse. And it was so funny to me that I thought once I reached a certain weight, I could stop. And it doesn't have anything to do with that.
No, it so doesn't. And I think that you're not alone in that thinking, yeah, just making up this goal, right? Of like, soon as I'm married, as soon as I have kids, as soon as I graduate college, as soon as I get a real job, as soon as I start making money, like then I'll be an adult and right, when a highly addictive substance is in the mix, it doesn't care, right? It doesn't care what weight you are or if you're loved.
Right. It had nothing to do with it. I have an amazing husband and terrific kids, and I have the job of my dreams. I love my job. And yeah, I was blacking out, all the things we do.
Yeah. And so when you started drinking, like when you go back to that, you said you were 15?
I was 15. Yeah. It was before a dance. Yeah. I was going with my friend's twin brother from another school. I like had to ask him. And I felt so ugly, and my friends were all going with like guys from our class or like older classes. And I grabbed a bottle of vodka from my parents' liquor cabinet and I polished off a lot of it. And my friends spent the whole night taking care of me. And that was sort of my entrance into drinking. And that's what my life would look like until I got sober when I was, 43. I got sober. Wow. 44 now. Yeah.
And so when you look back at that, what's the story that you do tell now about it? What did you get from that, right? Because you got something.
I think I just felt courageous and not aware of my body. And if someone was to say something about my body, because it was the 90s and people were really like, the 90s were the worst.
They were the worst. They were the best and the worst.
Right. So I think I felt courageous. I think I felt brave. And I think I thought if anyone was going to say something about how I looked when I was dancing or whatever, it was not going to hurt me as badly. And that just became how I handled every single situation that was social. This is like the first year that I ever walked into a new event sober. It's so fun though. Like you figure it out.
I love your attitude about it. Instead of like, I think for most of us, because whether it is, whether it is weight or whatever we're dealing with when we start drinking, right? Like I know when I started drinking, it was for sure a feeling of like not enough, don't belong, need to be someone else. Like it just uncomfortable in your skin.
Oh.
Yes. And then alcohol really comes in handy, right? And you're like, oh, thank God. And now I don't care about the turmoil at home, or I don't care about how I feel or what I look like.
Exactly. And it's funny, I look at you and I think, oh my gosh, you are like the kind of woman like I would have looked at and thought, she can have one glass of wine. She's so beautiful. You look just like someone who has everything. You would never need that to loosen up. Right?
Isn't that? Yeah. And that's incredible. And I look at you mm-hmm. and think the same thing. And that's the thing is, but it's yeah. true. We're all like on the outside. I think my mom always says she's the therapist of the group. And Anne Lamott, she always quotes her, like, don't compare your insides to somebody else's outsides. Right?
Mm-hmm. Because oh, that's great.
Isn't that so good?
Yes.
That I think for me has been the joy of sobriety is we have conversations like this and we're like, yes, okay, great. All the outside shit, like we've got stuff and we look a certain way, but like what's going on inside? And like, that's what I learned when I like created this whole thing. I'm like, oh, we're all kind of feeling awkward and scared and anxious as moms, and especially over COVID and all of those things that we've been having to deal with, right? And so when you strip that away and we're just like, hey, can we just show up and tell the truth? Like, wouldn't that be cool? And then you get to have conversations like this.
I know. It's the best. This is
it's the best
thing ever. And I always say it's better than losing, you know, 107 pounds. I yeah. have never. And then you know what? What's that thing people talk about? Like the pink cloud or something.
Yeah.
So I had the pink cloud, but it never went away. I was like, oh, when's this feeling of like happiness going to go away? When is it going to get stale and old? And like, it only has gotten better.
Yes. I love that you say that, 'cause when I hear pink cloud, I didn't have that either. And I'm just, yeah, I'm over 4 years and I'm like, no, the gratitude is like still very palpable. And like, yeah,
it doesn't for me. It like hasn't gone away. And yeah, I'm like, ooh, I never felt gratitude about anything either. I was a person who was always like, she's better. She's making more money. Like they have a better house. She's got it all. And I was always comparing, and I've also stopped doing that. And I swear, everything shifted when I stopped drinking.
Okay, so this is – I like your story too, because – so you had your eye on the prize of like, I'm going to get this surgery, this life-changing surgery, and it's going to change everything. And when did you get it? In 2019. So you got it right before COVID.
Right before COVID, right before. I would have gained another 50 pounds. So – I did it right before COVID. I became like an exercise fiend. But yeah, I just thought this whole shift that was going to bring me happiness. You know, it made me healthier, but it didn't make me a better mom.
Yes. And so it didn't change anything like inside.
Mm-mm.
And you know, you hear people talk about this, whether it's success or mm-hmm. the job or the goal weight or right. whatever. It's like, oh, that shit, it doesn't make all the difference.
No, it doesn't. It made some difference, but not what I was thinking. It made my life a little easier in that I fit in places and like physically fit in places. And yeah, I had more energy with my kids, but like, but the biggest change was that I stopped drinking and I wasn't anxious the next day. I wasn't depressed. Like, I don't know. I just feel joy now and I'm a better mom because of it. And my kids don't see me drinking 5 glasses of wine a night. They're little. They're 7 and 8. So I'm hoping they won't remember much.
Yeah. Well, and so you got your surgery, then COVID, and then your drinking ramped up, did it, COVID, because it was COVID.
Yeah. Just like the women in the story for today, like that was like a common thread.
Like if there's a drumbeat of women that I talk to, it's and then COVID.
And that's what I found with the story and then COVID. It was a dark time. And yeah, that's when I started drinking, getting boxes of wine because I didn't want my family to see the bottles. And I felt like it was easier to get rid of the boxes. All these weird tricks.
Totally. And that alcohol was considered essential, right? So that we mm-hmm. could have it like delivered. And I always want to point out it was considered essential. Courtney in our group, because for a long time, I was like, you guys, why is this considered essential? And she was like, well, it's because you could die of alcohol withdrawal. And you can't, like, that's very rare. Like, you can't die of, like, opioid withdrawal, but you can die, like, alcohol withdrawal and detox is so dangerous that it had to be essential. So, like, how messed up is that?
Beyond. So upsetting.
And you did you have like your pod that you were drinking with? Like you said you were like around the fire and stuff that you would drink, right?
Sure. Yeah. So I did. I had a lot of, but you know, I still am friends with all those people. I read on Instagram and other people's stories that a lot of people had to find all new friends. And I was lucky that that wasn't the case. I definitely have leaned on sober friends and I call them all the time for advice. But yeah, so I had a pod of like girls I was drinking with, but they've all been really supportive, which is so nice. Like I don't That's want amazing. People to think when you get sober, like your friends are all going to be like, why? And
right. Totally. I yeah. think that comes with age too, right? Like I'm 43 and at least as I've gotten older, like I've gotten more mm-hmm. selective in my friends anyway. Right. Like I'm not collecting friends. I'm like the ones who are in no matter what's in our cup. Right.
Right. I did realize though, there were certain people that I only liked when I was drinking and I can't fathom going out to dinner with them without being drunk. So that is a sign that that's not like the right friend for me or the right friends for me.
Totally. I think that that's really important as a woman to stop yeah. and be like, okay, because I do think the initial response might be, well, what if people don't like me anymore? Right. And instead of that being like, well, what if I don't like those people anymore? What if I realize that our bond was getting drunk? And actually, when you're sober and around drunk people, like drunk people are really annoying. Yeah. They're the worst.
It's like fun for a couple of minutes. I could take like, you know, I don't stay at the party late. Like, I don't think any of us do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine.
It's fine for like a half an hour. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm really tired. I gotta go.
I know. But so you get to be more selective and you realize if it's the one that you feel anxious around or who makes you want to drink, probably not the right friends. And that's okay.
It's so true. And then especially the friendships that you make in sobriety, I mm-hmm. think, and I see this like in our membership all the time, like the stuff that we talk about, like you and I are just meeting and we're talking about deep stuff.
I know.
Like it's Ooh. Like, no. Tell me your trauma. And it's yeah. hard then to go back and just talk about like – just like surface stuff for me. Can I talk about like things that actually matter?
No.
So when was the moment that you were like, oh, hold on, I think I'm done?
There are so many. I decided to just do dry January and give it a whirl because this is so dark. There was this one night that I could never get out of my mind and I was puking. And my kids saw, and I didn't want them to, but they like came in and I felt such shame. They didn't know why I was throwing up, but like I did. And I, you know, like it just felt awful. And that next day felt awful. And that was a really low moment for me. There were so many like sad things that happened. Nothing horrible, like no DUIs and no arrests. And I never fought, you know, I never got into like altercation.
Yeah.
I didn't want my girls to grow up seeing that.
Mm-hmm. And I can tell, like, even you telling that now, like you can feel it. Like you can go back there and feel that. And I hope that you have compassion for who you were as a mom then and who you are as a mom now, you know. I think sharing those stories and like actually giving them oxygen and saying like, okay, this is my most shameful thing. Like if this is the thing that could stab me through the heart, right? Mine for me is I nursed my 3-month-old baby in a blackout the last time I drank. And like, yeah. I don't remember it, but there's no way he slept through, right? Because he was 3 months old and like he liked to nurse. And so and it was the first time I was drinking after having him, but that was the last time, right? And I think like saying it, like now it's almost like I don't feel that shame anymore.
It gets easier, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
When you talk about it, you can let it go.
I think that I can so clearly see, and it's probably with time too, mm-hmm. but I can see that's not me as a mom. Like that wasn't me. Right? Just like that wasn't you. That was clearly the alcohol, right? That was very clearly the alcohol. And by removing something, by removing alcohol, then you're allowed to be the mom that you truly are and who you always were, right? Alcohol right. gets in the way. And so,
it does.
Yeah.
And I feared embarrassing. I've talked about this before, but there was an auction at my girls' school. And it was 2021 or 22, and I pre-gamed before this auction. I was a hot mess by the time we arrived. All the parents from their school I was falling over. I like was hugging teachers, and it was a big to do. Everyone, like, people were talking about it the next day.
I'm only laughing now because it's like hugging. I can just picture it. Like, I'm sure I've been there hugging teacher, right? And you're like, why am I hugging
the teacher? Yes. Always like the drunkest in the room. Like when I drink, I'm very I'm sloppy. I don't hold it in well. So I'm like visibly wasted. My eyes are slits, like I'm falling. People are getting up from our table because they don't want to sit with us. And what really was hard the next day was thinking, you know, there's going to come a time when people are like, we heard your mom was really drunk, or like, your mom was a mess. I was worried that parents wouldn't let me drive their kids, right? Like that people wouldn't want their kids coming here for a play date because I was the drunk mom. And when I was growing up, there was a mom I wasn't allowed to go in a car with. And I didn't want to be that mom that parents were afraid to let their kids come here, or they weren't allowed to drive with Rachel.
Right.
And I never want my kids to feel embarrassed because of me, or scared, or not safe, all those things.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And like my kids for sure will be embarrassed because of me, but not because of alcohol.
Yeah, but not because you were drunk. Like, yes, just like
for many other things, I embarrass my kids all the time. But yes, totally. Right. It's like that, the counting on, right? And the trusting. Mm-hmm. And like that they can trust you, but you can trust you, and you can trust you to be able to drive and to be able. Yeah.
Yes. To take care of people. You don't want to be like the known drunk mom in town.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I've been so vocal about my sobriety. So people know, like, I got it together. And not only did I get it together, but like, it's amazing. Join me. Like, even.
Yes.
So good.
That it's not like the sentence, right? It's not like the sentence that you're like, you have to live without for the rest of your life and you're going to miss it.
No, everything gets better. Your marriage gets better. You parent better together. Like, your kids are more fun. Don't you enjoy your kids so much more than you did when you were drinking?
Yes.
I don't know. It just, I just think I just felt guilt.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about like mom guilt versus mom shame. And I think like I still have mom guilt, right? And I kind of consider mom guilt a sign that like, yeah, I really care about these little humans, and like I'm invested. Part of that price is probably feeling guilty sometimes, but I just try to make friends with the guilt. I think it's the shame, and it's the mom shame for me was like the most corrosive thing. And the thing about, I think mom guilt can kind of nudge at the truth a little bit, right? Like, oh, that was, I was like, okay. But the thing about mom shame is that it's a liar, and saying like, I am a bad mom. Like, I am not worthy of being their mom. Mm-hmm. I'm not up to the task, or I'm not able to do it, or I'm not valued, or whatever. And that's a liar. And for me, what I saw was that alcohol just brought with it shame. Like, that was the price to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that especially as moms, that mom shame that you and I talked about before, like when you were puking in the toilet, right? And they saw, right? I know. And like when I was nursing my, right? Like, it's hard even to like hear it, right? And and there's no judgment here, like none. Like when I'm nursing my baby in a blackout, right? That shame feels impossible to feel. It feels too hard to make eye contact with and to say And so then that just perpetuates this drinking because alcohol is really good at making us not feel. And I always call it like mold in the basement, right? Because it's still there. It still happened. And we're just not talking about it. We're not saying like, no, yeah, we get it. Like to be in a room of women who are like, yep,
right,
yes, we get it. And like to help us work through that. Without that, I think that we just stay stuck and addicted probably.
Yes. And then you just stay in that cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And without someone saying like, no, 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 that wasn't you. That just wasn't you as a mom. That's just a lie, you know?
It's your evil twin.
Right. It's your evil twin with alcohol, the nasty bitch.
Right. Like sober me is so much different than drunk me. I have like, I don't know. Every mistake I made was probably due to alcohol. Like, I don't typically make like big mistakes when I'm sober. Everything bad that happened to me happened when I was drunk.
Yes. Isn't that insane?
Yeah. And people are like, I met my wife when I was drunk. I'm like, good for you. But like, for the most part.
Yeah. That's like one thing in the pro column.
Sure. But like, nothing good came out of it ever.
No.
Like, nothing good. Nothing good. Only bad choices, only dangerous choices.
Yes. And that's, I think realizing that, that's what happened when I stopped drinking. I was like, okay, fine. Let me just take a look. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let me just see like what this really did and what it is and how I used it and all of those things. And yeah, when you realize that, then it's really hard to go back and to look at it how you used to, as like fun and celebratory and all of the things, because it's just not.
Yeah. Do you talk to your kids about it?
Yeah. So I was going to talk to you about that too. Yeah. So yes. And my kids are 9, 7, and 4. And my story is a little different because my biggest drinking was like in high school, college, 20s. And then I really did like walk the line of too much, not enough in motherhood, but the shame was still the same. Right.
Yeah.
And so even if they didn't like witness when I was drunk or if I had too much, I still had that shame, except for like the blackout with the baby. See, then you just see it loses its weight. Okay. That you're like, okay,
yeah, we're laughing.
And so I do talk about it with my kids very openly because I grew up in the 90s when it was the "this is your brain on drugs" thing. And I was like, okay,
yes.
No drugs, got it. And like fried
no
eggs
cocaine.
Are, yes, no, no cocaine, yeah. Like got it.
Right.
I'm very against drugs
right.
and violence, like dare.
Yeah.
But like alcohol was like, yeah, no, go ahead. Like that's fine. And so
right.
I don't want that for my kids. And so I do talk about it. And people are like, well, do you villainize it? And I'm like, you guys – you just have to tell the truth about alcohol. You don't have to do the heavy lifting. I don't have to like embellish or like lie. I just literally have to tell them what it is, what it does to their brain, how it makes people act. And they're like, ew, like that sucks.
Right.
Yeah.
Same. We talk a lot about it, but basically, you know, yeah, we're going to talk about it and we're not going to be the house where you can like drink here. It's safer. Like
totally.
My parents did that and they did what they did what they thought was right. Like they were doing the best.
It was a different
that
time for sure.
Well, it was a different time. Again, the 90s.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, they're not going to drink here and I want them to know like this could stunt development. This is really bad. This is a carcinogen and it's there with tobacco and radiation and. What's the other one? Tobacco, radiation, and asbestos.
Asbestos, yes.
There should be a warning label. Like, I don't know if there is.
No, there's not. There is in Ireland.
There should be a warning label saying, like, this is poison. And I want my kids to know that. I want to put the fear of God in them. And
yeah.
Maybe they'll be able to moderate their drinking. I don't know. I think they don't need it. I think that life is terrific. And all these celebrities that are speaking out, I'm so happy because they have such big platforms. And every time another one comes forward, I'm like, yes.
Yes. I know. Like everybody speak out about it. And even like on Vanderpump Rules and stuff.
Yes. They are influencing younger generations.
It's yes. Yes.
Incredible.
Completely. Have you talked to your girls about when you were sick and what they saw or no?
No, I don't. I really remember. So,
yeah.
Well, Nora's going to turn 9 in May. Will is 7. They're 7 and 8 now. I don't think they really remember, but I do remember there were the comments like, mommy drinks wine. Mommy loves wine. I don't think they remember what it looks like for mom to be drunk and fuzzy and sleepy. Yeah, I don't think they remember.
Yeah. And if they ever ask, right? And I know that Jess Leahy talks about that, about being like, hey, don't just say grandpa fell asleep on the couch because he was tired, right?
Right. And that's, you know, I had an alcoholic grandparent and all I knew was they were an alcoholic, but I didn't know how it affected my parents and what their life was like because of that.
Yeah. And if it was scary or
if they felt ashamed of their parents.
Yes.
I know they didn't have friends over because they were worried. So yeah, we're so lucky that our kids won't ever have to feel that way.
It's so true. And that's probably why your pink cloud, even though it's just a pink sky. And I don't think it's not going to pass because yeah, you're seeing the benefits of how good it feels to have, you know, your girls be able to count on you. And like, there's nothing better.
Friends, everyone in your life can count on you. We're so much better. Like, I never thought I was a good person until that's probably a whole other thing, but I always felt like a bad person.
You did?
Bad. I don't know. I think I just carried that shame and it made me feel ugly and bad. And then when I stopped drinking, I was like, okay, I'm a good person. Like, I don't know.
And really, you were always a good person. It was just that alcohol was getting in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like a bad mom for like wanting to put my kids to bed so I could drink more and all of that stuff. Yeah.
Ugh. And now I just want to put my kids to bed so that I can like think a thought without – I know. Well, it's so funny because Audrey, my friend, always talks about the mom guilt kind of when you're drinking, then you try to overcompensate, right? And that doesn't feel natural either. And then that feels fraudulent. Right. And it's like, oh, I'm only doing this because I feel ashamed about drinking last night. And so then this isn't real either. And all of, like the knots that we can find ourselves in.
So your drinking was pretty stable.
I mean, I don't think stable. I mean, I was a blackout drinker, like in college and in my 20s up until getting married. Right. I suffered from postpartum OCD after the birth of my first, which I think, I mean, it was terrifying, but I was almost so consumed with that there was no room for alcohol. There was no room for anything because my brain was driving me crazy. And so I think that kind of set the tone. I did blackout one time when my daughter was like 10 months old. My best friend and I were like, oh my God, okay. She had a baby and we were over and we're like, yeah, champagne. Like, see, we're still cool. Like, we've still got it. We could still, you know, talk about, you know, boys and like, and like, let's talk about our past and let's talk, you know, like, let's just not be moms for like, but our babies were there. Our babies were 10 months old. And so they fell asleep on the couch, but we were like, I don't remember the night ending. My husband came home and he was like, what? And so that scared me like so much. And it signaled to me like, okay, that can't happen anymore. I still would like, you know, if we went on trips or something, just my husband and me, it was still like, I still hated my relationship with alcohol. But I was able then to be like, okay, 2 glasses of wine, 3 glasses of wine with a lot of control. Which was horrible, because then I still, like, if I said I'd have 2 glasses of wine and I had 3, even if I wasn't outwardly wasted, I still, that shame, it was still the 3 a.m. wake up being like, oh, how could you have done that? Like, you can't count on yourself. What kind of, why? What are you doing? Like, what kind of mom is this that she, you know, all of that stuff still was like in there, even though it wasn't, even my husband would be like, no, it's fine. And I'm like, but it doesn't feel fine, you know?
I know.
And like, you know, when it doesn't feel fine.
I mean, my husband doesn't think I'm an alcoholic. I guess I do call myself, my husband,
do you
think I have a problem? I'll say I'm an alcoholic. My husband is like, you're fine. You didn't have a liver, but your liver was fine. And
right.
But like, none of my behaviors were fine. I think people still think alcoholic looks like person sitting outside on street with a bottle and a paper bag, like,
yeah, like under
wearing
the bridge,
disgusting clothes. Right. And yeah, and I know, you know, I've always had great jobs and
yes. Yeah. You didn't lose everything.
No, did not lose everything.
And that's the thing. It's like, we've been taught just to wait and like, well, okay, we can wait.
Right.
But like, what are we waiting for?
A car crash? I don't know. Are we waiting for the rock bottom? I think I was waiting for rock bottom. I had so many rock bottoms and I was waiting for the big one. Like,
yes.
The big one, right?
Like, well, I think we're waiting, or we've like been taught to wait until like we lose this privilege, until someone takes it away. Until it's not our choice. Until someone's like, you have lost the privilege of drinking. I'm taking your card. And then you're like, okay, right? Instead of just being like,
it's enough. Right. So I think, yes, as we need to get rid of this idea that there has to be rock bottom. And I think the general population thinks there has, everyone always wants to know, what was your rock bottom?
Right. Yeah. Like a salacious story, like, ooh, tell me. And really they're asking to say like, well, let me take the temperature on my drinking. Because if you tell me you're rock bottom, then I know. Now I have this, right? And then I can measure to be like, okay, where am I?
Yes. I used to do that with stories.
Same.
When I was with a few people who got sober, I was always pitching stories on sobriety. Myself, I wanted to do it. And I was always like, what's your rock bottom?
Right. Yeah. So it's either like we want permission to keep drinking or permission to stop.
I think I wanted permission to keep going. I just didn't want to stop. I loved it. I still like, sometimes I look back and I'm like, ah, would be nice, but it really wouldn't be. And
yeah, I think that's important to hear though, like for women, because
it's okay to feel that.
It's like missing a toxic ex. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like being like, you know what? He was really hot. Like, yeah, he was really hot sometimes. And like, that's great. But like, yeah, I'm like, oh, but you remember what an asshole he is and how horrible he made you feel? And he gaslit you and tricked you. And like, oh, right. And you can like see a picture of him with his new girlfriend and assume that he's changed when you know he hasn't. And so even for a second, if you're like, oh, he's still hot. And then you think, oh, yeah, but remember what she's dealing with at home.
Exactly. That is so true. You know, I was, I had to run into a hotel bar. We were staying in a hotel because we needed a fork and I didn't know where else to get. Anyway, so standing in a, I loved drinking in hotels, like a dark, dimly lit, cozy bar.
A hotel bar. I remember telling my husband, oh, I love a hotel bar.
I miss that. So I go into the hotel bar and I'm standing there at the bar waiting for a fork. And so many thoughts were running through. I started to like panic a little bit. Not that I thought I was going to order a drink, but I just felt, it felt so weird to be
scene of the crime
waiting for the bartenders. Yes. And it really shook me. I didn't want to drink or anything, but it was a weird, it was like a spooky feeling.
Yeah.
Because so much of my life was spent waiting for the bartender to take my drink order. And it was weird to be back as a non-drinker.
And now you're like, I'm just waiting for a fork. I promise.
It gave me the creeps. I don't know.
Yes. You know what? It's funny that you say hotel bar because so sometimes my husband travels for work and sometimes I go with him and then I just get to like bop around while he does all of his work stuff. Right. And so we were at like the Boca Raton. This was like in the fall. You know, it was like so nice. And everyone's at the hotel bar at night. And I was like, oh, I'm tired. I'm glad we're not going to go to the hotel bar. And then I went in the morning to write when no one was there. I went to the hotel bar because it's like open, like a lounge each. And I was like, oh my God, this is my new love for the hotel bar is like coffee and like writing in the morning. I like repurposed the hotel bar.
That's great. I love that idea. Florida sounds great right now.
Oh my God, I know. You're in Boston, right?
Yeah, we moved here 2017. Yeah, you did. Life is in New York. Yeah, I know that could be a whole other podcast. My years at a celebrity magazine being wasted off my ass.
Where were you before?
I worked at Us Weekly in like when magazines were cool.
Okay, when I used to buy them every single week. You did?
We had Gossip before anyone else had it because there was no Instagram. There wasn't like Dumois.
No. Yes, oh my God.
We had it all and it was fantastic. We would go to events and I would get like cases of vodka sent to my desk and wine and clothes.
Oh my God.
It was such a cool time to be in magazines. But when I was working in New York covering events as like a booze bag reporter, so many stories of like.
Okay, this reminds me of like Joe Piazza. You know Joe then, right?
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay, because I love Joe. And then she'll tell me stories and I'm like, oh my God, it's like the heyday.
Joe and I came up at the same time. I don't think we ever worked together. But coming up in that time, I mean, we were out every night. It was a time.
Okay, I need to have you back just to talk about all. Because I am like a pop culture. Oh, that's like so my
thing.
Such
a fun time to be in magazines. It really was.
Okay, one more question. What was the feedback that you got on the article on today.com?
So many incredible. I like get emotional. Just like so many people reaching out to say thank you. that it was hopeful. A lot of people, just said it was brave. There was some really good feedback on that story. And what I love is that somebody can search it, who's looking to stop drinking, and find that and see there's all these different options. Like, I think people think AA is the only option. I thought that was the only option, but there's so many ways. AA is amazing, but there's all these other ways to stop drinking. And I hope someone will find it and click the links and, you know, reach out to the people I wrote about. There's some great ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just such a good community. I love the sober community. It's incredible. It's like the best people ever. Like, I love you.
I know. I love you. It's the best, because it's like we're creating something that we needed, right? And so I think it's very like tailored, and it's just so honest and vulnerable, and it is brave. And that is brave for you to write that and to come on here and tell your story. And I'm honored to be the first podcast, the first sobriety story podcast.
I know. I never thought I would be I just never, ever. I thought I would tell people I was sober, but not really be sober, which I'd done before in college. I was like, I'm not drinking, but I was like drinking. And I thought I was going to die drunk or something. And anyway, I know.
And look at you.
Feeling. Yes.
Go look at the teaser on Instagram, because Rachel's like glowing. You're like aww, joy. Thank you. You really are. Like, it's amazing.
So nice.
Rachel, thank you so much. Tell everybody where we can find you and read all of your stuff. And I'll link everything in the show notes too.
Oh, wow. Thanks. So on Instagram, I'm Rachel Paula. And I made for my first year of sobriety, I was Wine and the Fat Girl on Instagram, both. But I use Rachel Paula more. And I am a parenting writer for today.com. So you can find me there.
Yay. Thank Rachel, you. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
It's easy to blame ourselves for our struggles with alcohol. We see people around us being able to control their drinking without any consequences, yet no matter what we try, we can't seem to figure it out for ourselves. My name is Jillian Teets, and I am the host of the Sober Powered Podcast, where I use my biochemistry background to explain the latest research in addiction and help you understand both why you drink the way you do and how to develop the skills and mindset you need to find freedom from alcohol. I discuss topics like why we think about our drinking 24/7, why we have no off switch, and why we crave alcohol. If you're struggling with your drinking or you know someone who is, then I hope that you will check out the Sober Powered Podcast. New episodes every Friday. See you there.